Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Time for Bookmarks, our weekly segment where we learn a bit more about a renowned Kiwi by asking them about their favourite things. Today we're talking to author Deborah Chaloner, who is one of New Zealand's best-selling novelists, with a knack for writing gripping, accurate historical fiction. Now, part of that stems from her own background as a historian. She's the author behind the Children of War series, The Convict Girls, The Smuggler's Wife, and many more. And her latest book, Black Silk and Sympathy, is out on the 3rd of April. Deborah Chaloner joins me now. Hello there.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Oh, good. Great to have you on the show. Welcome. And you are...
Thank you.
Originally from the Waikato. Tell me about life in Huntly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was really good growing up there. It was a great place to grow up, actually. It really was, yeah.
You went to Huntly College. I don't think you did particularly well at school, but then somehow you ended up with a PhD in history. So what went right?
That's a good question. Persistence, I think, just finding the subject that I like. I went to university to do English, and you know that didn't work out too well. So I changed to history, and that turned out to be my thing. So I did an undergraduate degree in history, went away and did a job, and came back and did a master's in history, and then went on and did the PhD, and sort of accidentally got published and went on from there, and here I am now, really.
What was it about history that appealed to you?
I like history because it shows us why we are the way we are today. And if we look at history carefully, I think it shows us where we should go, and it also, I think, can tell us what we shouldn't do again if we pay attention. And that's the big if. And we don't pay attention, I don't think. I think sometimes we repeat mistakes of the past, and you know, I don't think I should be having to say that, but we do. You know, there's nothing new under the sun, and things go in cycles. And it's good to look back and study those cycles. But we are who we were, basically.
What was the topic of your PhD, and how did that end up getting you published?
It was about New Zealand Vietnam veterans and how they remembered their experience in Vietnam. And I sent away a couple of chapters to about 4 New Zealand publishing houses. This was in the, when was it, 1990s, and I got some offers, and I took the one with the most money, of course, which wasn't a lot back then, and that turned out to be Grey Ghosts. So that was my first book. That was nonfiction. And then that was with Hodamaya Beckett, and they offered... I think it was a huge $4,000, and I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
And that did quite well. And then I wrote a book for HarperCollins about Agent Orange, and that didn't do so well. I don't think people were really that interested in what Agent Orange has done to veterans.
Yeah.
And then I was asked, could I write fiction? And I didn't know because I hadn't tried, so I had a go. And that turned out to be Tamar, and she got to number 3, I think, on the bestseller list, and
gosh,
I just haven't stopped. Yeah.
I know.
So now this is book 21.
It's book what?
21.
Yeah, gosh.
This new one.
Somewhere along the line, you stopped drinking. This is a personal topic, but I know it's one you've talked about before. Are you happy to tell us a bit of that story?
Yeah, I have. I stopped drinking in 28 years ago. So that was, I don't know, I can't count backwards. That must have been, it was halfway through my PhD, and I realised, well, this isn't going to happen if I don't stop. Because, you know, as they say, life becomes unmanageable. And mine certainly was. And I realised I wasn't going to achieve the things I wanted to achieve if I didn't stop. I was a binge drinker. I didn't drink every day. But I could just see I wasn't going to get there.
Mm.
And so I went to AA and I did the 90 meetings and 90 days thing. And I went to AA for years and years and years. And I still go on and off, and, you know, life's good. I'm having a good recovery. Nobody ever recovers from alcoholism, but it's part of my journey, and I'm happy with the way things have turned out.
Yeah, and you've been a huge professional success, career success. Do you think you would have had that if you hadn't stopped drinking?
Well, that would be a big fat no.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm positive. I wouldn't. No, I just because people might have this. People do. People say, "Oh, you must be so wealthy now." But hardly. And people think that writing is sitting outside, you know, with a hat on in the sun, with butterflies floating around. It's not. It's sweating at your computer day after day to get my word count out. And I have an Excel spreadsheet that I fill in every day with my word count and all that sort of thing to get. Yeah, it's a discipline.
Discipline, yeah, and focus and I guess productive use of your time, which doesn't often go with drinking.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, strangely. It doesn't go hand in hand with drinking. So, no, I don't think any of this would have happened. No, I would have sat around moaning on about how awful it was that other people had ruined my life and, you know, you probably don't know, but that's how it goes. So, no, I'm really pleased with how things have turned out.
Hey, let's play you a song, eh? You've got some great tracks here. We're going to start with one by Courtney Barnett. Tell me how you chose this one.
I had a great 70s. People say, oh, 70s is terrible. But that's when I was a youthist in Huntley, and I had a great time. And
you were what in Huntley?
A youthist. You know, people were youth, and I was a youthist.
Okay, right. I haven't heard that one. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Okay. So I usually just listen to 70s music, right? Things got shady in my 80s. So I've got a lot of 70s music. I've got all my 70s records. So I hardly listen to modern music, but I don't know, 8 years or 9 years ago, I was listening to someone called Courtney Barnett, and this song just really, really captured me. And it's got a video that goes with it. And oh my God, is it depressing? But
oh,
I love
great.
It because, yeah, the guitar just says, it says Australia to me because it just says big open blue skies. And it's got this little line or two in it about Vietnam, and it's fantastic. I play it, I don't know, every couple of days.
Oh,
it just really, it's really evocative.
She's got a real storyteller's voice too, hey?
Yeah, she has, yeah.
Okay, let's play some of it. This is Depreston by Courtney Barnett.
You said we should look out further. I guess it wouldn't hurt us. We don't have to be around all these coffee shops. Now we got that percolator. Never made a latte greater. I'm saving $23 a week. We drive to a house in Preston. We see police arrested. lot of room for storage if you've just got one. And it's going pretty cheap, you say. Well, it's a deceased estate. Aren't the pressed metal ceilings great? Then I see the handrail in the shower, a collection of those canisters for coffee, tea and flour, and a photo of a young man in a van in Vietnam. And I can't think of floorboards anymore, whether the front room faces south or north, and I wonder what she bought it for.
Courtney Barnett, Depressed, and some great lyrics there. You can listen to the song in its entirety if you're interested. Deborah Chaloner is my guest on Bookmarks, who is a writer and a reader, and kind of an unusual first pick. We asked you some of your favourite titles, and you've got Dressed.
Yep.
Fashionable Dress in Aotearoa, New Zealand, 1840 to 1910. Tell me why you've chosen this book.
Well, physically, it is such an absolutely beautiful book. Have you ever seen it?
No, I haven't come across it.
It won the Ockham in 2021, and it's the most beautifully produced book I've seen for a long, long time. It's got the actual covers. It feels like, I'm raving on here pointlessly, but it feels like a lovely book to hold. It's really heavy. It's got ribbons that you put in for your bookmark, and it's got beautiful colour plates all the way through it. It's a picture book, but it's got quite a lot of text in it. And the writer, Claire, she's done such a lot of research, and it is such a valuable book for historical writers and researchers. It is just the loveliest book. And it wasn't even that expensive, I thought. It was way cheaper than I thought it should have been when I bought it. It's lovely.
You've got a really diverse selection here, non-fiction and fiction, and sort of, I guess, maybe high and low culture. The Commitments by Roddy Doyle is a story many people will know from the film, but it's worth looking up the book, huh?
The book's really good. It's part of the Barrytown trilogy that Roddy Doyle wrote, and that's about the same family who live in Barrytown just outside of Dublin. And the other two books in the trilogy are called The Snapper and The Van. I really enjoyed that. Apparently Roddy Doyle said he wrote the trilogy because at the time nobody was really writing about proper Irish culture.
Mm-hmm.
And he does capture that in The Commitments. So that's I like gritty, down to earth reads, and I suppose Union Street was like that as well.
It's Pat Barker's first novel. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, that was set in the north of England in post industrial 1970s, and that's seven stories that are connected about seven different women, and it's really grim, but it's really beautiful in a way. The connection between these seven women, old and young, in this dirty, filthy, grotty town, it's really quite lovely. It's really worth reading, I think. Yeah.
Deborah Chaloner is my guest. I was pleased to see the Chronicles of Narnia there as well. Is that a lovely memory from childhood, or is it one that you've returned to as an adult?
When I was about seven, maybe, I can remember having it read to us in school. The first, it's one that everyone knows, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but it's not the first book in the series. a nice teacher called Mrs. Bogie read it to us at school. But I'm onto my fourth boxed collection now because they keep falling apart. Hmm. But, yeah, it's a precious, precious part of my childhood. I think they're the first books I read where I realised that you could use words to make a different world.
Huh. I love that.
Yeah.
Is Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe your favourite of the lot?
No, I think The Magician's Nephew is, and that's the one where I've forgotten his name. Is it Eustace? Yeah, it might be Eustace. Jumps into the wood between the worlds and he jumps into the puddle and ends up in the world that's called Charn, and that's where the particularly nasty witch comes from. I thought that was amazing, jumping into the wood, into the puddle in the wood between the worlds.
Yeah, great. We'll talk about favourite TV shows, but we're going to play a track by Bobby Gentry. What's the story behind Ode to Billy Joe?
This is another miserable song. I think there's a theme here, and this one's from 67. It's about, I think, it doesn't actually say in the song what it's about. I think it's about suicide. I think Billy Joe threw himself off the Tallahatchie Bridge, but it doesn't say that. Either that or the singer pushed him off. You'd have to make up your own mind. But I really liked it because it tells a really, really good story. There's this juxtaposition between this family, this farming family, on one hand just living a fairly normal, ordinary life, and this drama that went on the bridge. And I really like that storytelling about it. And she's got an amazing voice, Bobby Gentry.
Huh. Great intro. Here it comes.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. And Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, well, Billy Joe never had a lick of sense, pass the biscuits please. There's 5 more acres in the lower 40 I got to plow. And Mama said it was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Brother said he recollected when he and Tom and Billy Joe put a frog down my back at the Carroll County Picture Show. And wasn't I talking to him after church last Sunday night? I'll have another piece of apple pie, you know it don't seem right. I saw him at the sawmill yesterday on Choctaw Ridge. And now you tell me Billy Joe's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Mama said to me, child, what's happened to your appetite? Well, I've been cooking all morning and you haven't touched a single bite. Your brother Taylor dropped by today. Said he'd be pleased to have dinner on Sunday. Oh, by the way,
said he saw a girl that looked a lot like you up on Choctaw Ridge. And she and Billy Joe was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Yeah, what was he throwing over? It's one of the great mysteries of popular music. The choice of Deborah Chaloner today on RNZ National. She's here for Bookmarks. That's Ode to Billy Joe by Bobby Gentry. Deborah, can we talk about your latest book? Can you tell us a bit about Black Silk and Sympathy?
It's about a girl called Tatiana Caldwell who emigrates from England to Sydney in the 1860s after her mother and father die. Her father dies, leaving her and her mother in penury because he's a gambler, though he was quite a wealthy man. She comes to Sydney and apprentices as an undertaker. And then she marries the undertaker, and sadly, he dies as well. But by some miracle, she's left his business, which is really unusual in those days because women were treated like chattels back then.
Yeah.
And were not left. Usually couldn't inherit anything from their husbands. She takes over the business and builds it up, and then she's accused of poisoning her husband. So she has to run around in circles proving that she didn't poison him. So readers get to learn all about mourning traditions and funeral in Sydney and in Victoria era and all that sort of thing. So it was great fun to research.
Yes, I was interested in that, how you get an understanding of what life in Sydney might have been like in 1865.
Well, you can only do that through research and you have to use your imagination. But having lived in Newcastle for 4 years, not that long ago, and spending a lot of time in Sydney, especially in the Rocks, you know, a lot of old Sydney is still there. It's not like New Zealand where we don't have a lot of buildings left, unless you go down to Oamaru or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
In Sydney, you can walk around in various precincts and be back there 150 years ago.
Yeah, I get that.
So, yeah. So you do need imagination. They've got fantastic repositories of information. You just have to do the research, really. They've got the most amazing cemetery, the biggest cemetery in the Southern Hemisphere, which is Rookwood Cemetery, which was used to be known as Haslam's Creek Cemetery, which is all the way through this book, Black Silk and Sympathy. But the name got changed in 1879, something like that, because the people of that suburb didn't want to be named after a cemetery, but it's
not very good for real estate prices, eh?
No, not really. But there's over a million souls buried in it now. And I've spent days wandering around there because it is so absolutely fascinating.
Gosh.
But really, it's just that I've been doing this for a long time now, and the knowledge builds up. It's not like every time I start a new book, I've got to start from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got a huge, my office is lined with books, reference books, and you know, I dread moving because it's just going to be such a drama packing up all the books. And
can you almost close your eyes and take yourself to some of these scenes which you write about?
Oh, I can. And once I walked around the Rocks, I wore a long skirt and my Doc Martens and a black jacket that, you know, that was tight around the middle, and I wore a bonnety thing and carried a basket around. And people, just to see what it was like walking up and down the steps in a long skirt and that sort of thing. people put a whole lot of money in my basket. It was really cool. I had about $80 by the end of the day. They thought I was one of those reenactors, and I wasn't. I was just, you know, testing out, walking around the rocks up and down the old steps.
Gosh.
So I'll do that. And I've been on tall ships and I've been down coal mines, and if I can, I will put myself in my character's shoes. I tried to bake bread. That was a disaster. Not going there again.
Hey, I've really enjoyed looking at some of your choices, and they're all over the place in a good way. I described it as high and low culture earlier, but you just don't really have much of a filter. You like what you like, right? You are a literary, you know, writer of historical fiction, but you love the Warriors, for example.
Yes, that's a side effect of growing up in Huntly.
Yeah,
I think
it's still part of you. And this is Spinal Tap. Have you heard they're making a new movie?
No, I haven't. Are they
a new Spinal Tap?
Is it a remake, or is it the same old characters?
Same characters, same actors. I understand. So, I'll find the release date. Yeah, I don't think it's far away, actually. Hey, Deborah, thank you for joining us today. I've really enjoyed spending some time with you. We're going to make room for some Led Zeppelin because we teased it at the start of the show. So thank you very much for your time. Black Silk and Sympathy is the name of the book. And why have you chosen Immigrant Song?
Because I think, well, Led Zeppelin is my all-time favourite band, and I couldn't go past putting one of their songs on the list, and I didn't want it to be Stairway to Heaven, because everyone likes Stairway to Heaven, but Immigrant Song is, I think, really, really inspiring. Let's hear it. Me too.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jesse.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.